Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There was no shortage of facts, or so-called facts, put forth last night in the first presidential debate of the 2012 election season, just 5 weeks out from Election Day now. President Barack Obama kicked off his remarks with a nod to his wedding anniversary, promising First Lady Michelle Obama that they'll spend it more romantically next year. And there's no reason to question those facts. But between President Obama and his Republican challenger, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, there were plenty of numbers and assertions flying back and forth. Joining us now to get at a few of those is Rob Farley. He's deputy managing editor for factcheck.org. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So in the factcheck.org story this morning, it said that you all found plenty of exaggerations and false claims, starting with the president accusing Mitt Romney of proposing a $5 trillion tax cut. Let's listen to something about that.
This is where there's a difference, because Governor Romney's central economic plan calls for a $5 trillion tax cut on top of the extension of the Bush tax cuts, so that's another $1 trillion, and $2 trillion in additional military spending that the military hasn't asked for. That's $8 trillion. How we pay for that, reduce the deficit, and make the investments that we need to make without dumping those costs onto middle-class Americans, I think, is one of the central questions of this campaign.
First of all, I don't have a $5 trillion tax cut. I don't have a tax cut of the scale that you're talking about. My view is that we ought to provide tax relief to people in the middle class. But I'm not going to reduce the share of taxes paid by high-income people. High-income people are doing just fine in this economy. They'll do fine whether you're president or I am.
So, Rob, Romney stated over and over again that he wasn't going to raise taxes. Instead, he wants to bring down deductions and exemptions and credits. If that's the case, wouldn't we wind up paying more taxes? What's going on?
You know, so President Obama is really telling half the story when he says that Romney's proposed a $5 trillion tax cut. And I'll explain. Romney has proposed cutting personal income tax rates 20% across the board. He also wants to do away with the estate tax. Now, over 10 years, that comes to a loss of about $5 trillion worth of revenue, as the president said. What he didn't say was that Romney would also cut some tax preferences, deductions and things that people get, particularly for high-income earners. So he said it would be revenue neutral. He said he's not looking to add to the deficit through this tax reduction plan. Now, part of the problem is that conversely, some independent tax analysts have looked at this and said that his math doesn't add up, that he can't possibly cut taxes across the board like he's talking about and not have a plan that favors the wealthy or explode the deficit, that one of those two things has to give. So they're saying, you know, things don't really add up, and he didn't adequately explain how he would make that mesh last night.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Rob Farley, deputy managing editor for factcheck.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Okay, so revenue versus spending. Mitt Romney said he won't support tax cuts that cost the government. Let's take a listen. I'm sorry.
I'm not looking to cut massive taxes and to reduce the revenues going to the government. My number one principle is there'll be no tax cut that adds to the deficit. I want to underline that. No tax cut that adds to the deficit. But I do want to reduce the burden being paid by middle-income Americans. And to do that, that also means I cannot reduce the burden paid by high-income Americans. So any language to the contrary is simply not accurate.
He brought up that issue about not lowering taxes for high-income, wealthy Americans repeatedly. Does that mesh with what he's been saying up to this point?
It does, but the sticking point here is that the Tax Policy Center, a nonpartisan group, looked at his plan and concluded that it wasn't mathematically possible for him to cut rates as he promised without either favoring these wealthy taxpayers. Because if you reduce these deductions, it won't offset the amount of money that they'll be reducing their taxes through this 20% across the board. So, when someone's making millions of dollars, if you reduce their tax income tax rate by 20%, you just can't make that up with deductions. And so this Tax Policy Center said that this his numbers aren't adding up yet.
It said in the story today on factcheck.org that the president oversold his health care law, claiming that the health care premiums have gone up slower than at any time in the last 50 years. Can you talk about that? You said it's true of healthcare spending, but not the premiums.
Right. He mentioned premiums, mm-hmm. and actually premiums have gone up during his 3 years of presidency. And the healthcare law, the folks that independent analysts that looked at it said that his healthcare law has had little to do with sort of this slowdown in the reduction of spending. And that's chiefly because a lot of the provisions of the healthcare law haven't even kicked in yet.
Mm-hmm. The premiums, though, you say they've gone up the three full years of his term that he served already. But premiums have been going up for decades, anyways. Are we talking about a rate of increase or an increase at all?
If they're talking about that, when they're talking about it slowing, they're still going up, but just not as fast as it's been going up in the past. At the rate that it's been going in the past, it was about a 3% increase. Last year to this, and so that's what they're talking about there. It's still an increase, but mm-hmm. not as as large as in years past.
Governor Romney claimed a new board established by the Affordable Care Act, which he respectfully called Obamacare, is going to tell people ultimately what kind of treatments they can have. You said that's not true.
Not true, and this is an old saw. We've been hearing this for a couple of years now. This board recommends cost-saving measures for Medicare. In the law, it legally is forbidden from rationing care, reducing benefits. So it's just not true. It's a claim that we hear over and over again from different Republican opponents of the plan, but it's just not accurate.
Is that the same thing that they're equating with the death panel, that sort of thing? Or is that something different?
You know, it sort of morphed into that, yes. Mm-hmm. Initially, it had to do with end-of-life care, the death panels. But then when that was sort of debunked, it morphed into this claim that there was this independent advisory board that was going to be rationing care. And if you read the law, it specifically says that it can't ration care. And their recommendations have to be approved by Congress as well. So there's some checks on that.
Oh, well, that could take years.
Yeah. But again, the idea is that, this board is supposed to find ways to find cost-saving measures in Medicare.
The president said that 5 million private sector jobs have been created in the past 30 months. And you refer to counting jobs that the Bureau of Labor Statistics won't add to the official monthly tallies until next year. Can you clarify that?
Yeah. If you were to go on the website, you'd see that the number is closer to 4.6 million jobs. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics does some projections that it doesn't make them official for a number of months. And so it probably won't be until sometime into early next year when those numbers will become official. But they're expected to be, he's right that that's where they're projected to go. They're just not official.
So he could have stayed with 4.6 million and been right on the money. No pun intended.
He could have. You wonder why people puff up statistics, because I can't imagine how that small difference would make such a big difference to a voter.
Likewise, Romney accused Obama of doubling the federal deficit. You said that's not true.
Not true. When Obama came into office, he inherited what was projected to be a $1.2 trillion deficit. Now, he added to that a little bit, and so it ended up being a $1.4 trillion deficit. But in the subsequent years, we've had deficits of $1.3 trillion for a couple years and then $1.2 trillion. This past year, so that's obviously clearly not doubled, but they're very high. It was very high when he got in, and they've stayed high.
And this was an interesting thing. I was interested to read this about what the president said, that he'd raise taxes on upper income people only to the level that they were when Bill Clinton was president, and that's not exactly the case.
No, it's not. And this is another frequent talking point you're hearing from President Obama lately. It's true that if you let these Bush tax cuts expire for these upper income earners, their tax rates would go back to where they were under President Clinton. However, there are a couple of taxes included in the health care law that are specifically levied on high income tax earners, on 3.8% tax on earned income, on investment income. And there's also a payroll tax increase for these upper income earners. So, in fact, these upper income folks will be paying a higher tax rate than they were under Clinton.
Governor Romney claimed that middle income Americans have seen their income come down by $4,300. That's not really the case?
No, that's an inflated figure. By our calculation, we looked up the census data last night, and median household incomes have gone down by. Now we're talking about inflation adjusted.
With inflation adjusted, right?
Right. So it's about $2,500 under the Obama administration. Now, Romney's referring to a report that was done that looked back from when the recession started, and so he's looking back in December of 2007. So you're talking about a full year, more than a year before Obama took office, that he's including in that figure.
And a lot went down before he took office.
Right. And there's also some evidence that perhaps things have stabilized, that we've bottomed out about a year ago, and that perhaps this adjusted income figure is starting to inch back up again. But again, these figures take a while to push through.
You guys in factcheck.org also noted the president touting the $4 trillion deficit reduction plan that's on the web, by the way. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org. Anyways, you said that it includes $1 trillion from winding down the wars that are coming to an end. What's the rub there?
Well, some independent groups that looked at that, you know, were sort of dubious about that $4 trillion figure, because when we're talking about war spending, this was deficit spending that was used to pay for these wars. So they aren't necessarily savings that we're getting that you can apply to say, you know, we're reducing the deficit, because this is, you know, money that you were, you know, spending from, it was deficit spending to begin with. And so he's included that in his $4 trillion reduction plan. As I said, some independent folks think that's that doesn't really make sense.
In another part of the debate, he also referred to that savings from winding down the wars that could be spent elsewhere, like for education and that sort of thing, I think.
Yeah, right. And that's exactly the point, is that, mm-hmm. you know, it's not necessarily money that can be spent elsewhere. It was deficit spending to begin with.
It's not. It's more money that we won't be owing once we're not borrowing it anymore.
Exactly. It's we're not going to continue borrowing to pay for these wars.
The point was made in the story today, Rob Farley, that Governor Romney sometimes came off as a surreal exaggerator. What did you mean by that versus what the president did?
Well, there was a couple of statistics that he threw out, and you'd mentioned it earlier. You know, why would he use a different figure when there's a perfectly good one that perhaps would be available to them? For example, Romney said that 20 million people might lose their health insurance under the new health care law. But the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, this is a government agency, put the figure closer to 3 to 5 million instead of 20 million. He also talked about several times in the debate last night about 23 million people being out of work. The number of jobless is much lower than that. He's including folks that they call them discouraged workers.
People have given up, right.
People have given up. And sometimes it's people that have retired or gone back to school. There's a number of reasons sometimes that people pull themselves out of the job force. And so to just sort of blanket call them, people who are out of work is a bit of a stretch.
It's a good question, though. I wonder if anyone's parsed that out yet, because I've heard that those distinctions made, but I haven't actually seen any numbers associated with them.
You know, during the primary, we heard some Republican candidates stretching that out and presenting different figures and saying, you know, the real unemployment rate is closer to 15% when they're including those kinds of folks, these discouraged workers and that kind of thing. So this is sort of a different version of that. This is the number of workers, same concept, just as opposed to a rate. But he's been hitting this statistic quite a bit of late. Mm-hmm. So I think probably one we'll be hearing again in the future with all these claims. These are ones we've heard before, mm-hmm. over and over again on the stump, and I think we're probably likely to hear them again in ads and in stump speeches and in future debates.
Before I let you go, I wanted to get at that $716 billion cut that Romney said the president cut from Medicare. That's not in a year. That's over a period of time, right?
That's over 10 years. And what we're talking about is reducing the growth in spending. It's not that they're going to cut the program by $716 billion. It's the future growth is going to be scaled back. And in fact, what that would do is it would extend the solvency of the program an additional 8 years from 2016 to 2024.
And he also, with the health care reform, that part of that, whatever might be lost in that lack of growth, would be made up for in health care reform. Is that part of it?
You know, that's where you know the Obama administration gets into trouble is that it does count that as savings that it can apply elsewhere. But again, we're not talking about cutting the program by this amount. You're talking about reducing the future growth of the program by that. Now you can call it savings, you can call it cuts, whatever you like, but it's not really a number that you can take from the program necessarily. It's not that you're getting reduced benefits necessarily from that.
Well,
although
Rob,
certainly there's an argument to be made that that could lead to that kind of thing.
Well, Rob Farley, I know you didn't get a lot of sleep last night. You did a great job.
We did not, but I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Rob Farley, he's Deputy Managing Editor for factcheck.org. We'll have that website posted, a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, round one of the presidential debates. We'll tally the scorecards with Gail Collins and John Meacham. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Sunny skies today reaching a high of 78, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 56 degrees. Partly sunny with a chance of afternoon rain on Friday, a high of 70, and then rain likely Friday night and getting colder, a low of 45 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners, investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life, at sherringtongroup.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
President Barack Obama and presidential hopeful Republican Mitt Romney faced off last night in the first of three presidential debates. Joining us now to rehash the event is political scientist and professor Joan McLean from Ohio Wesleyan University. She's taught there since 1990. Welcome back to the show, Joan.
Thank you.
Also with us is political scientist John Green, director of the Racy Bliss Institute of Applied Politics, and a bipartisan research and teaching institute, and also a senior fellow with the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. Welcome back, John.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
So I saw a headline, I think it was the LA Times headline, it kind of caught my eye. It said, in first debate, Obama and Romney politely disagree sharply. John Green, what do you make of that?
Oh, I think that's probably a pretty good description. People who have been following the campaign, and in Ohio, how could you avoid following the campaign, were probably surprised at the respectful tone that Governor Romney and President Obama used with each other last night. I thought it was a very civil discussion, but with a lot of sharp disagreements. The moderator, Jim Lehrer, tried to draw those sharp contrasts out, as much as possible, but, the candidates helped him because there were some quite sharp differences on the direction of the country and different public policies.
Joan McLean, some people translated perhaps Barack Obama's niceness and quieterness, those are both bad words, but as maybe unaggressive, falling back, tired sounding. What did you make of that? That he didn't throw the 47% figure out. He didn't get snarky at all, really.
Well, I think what we showed here was two candidates showing up. One came as the president, and one came as the challenger and the former governor. I think as a president, Obama basically looked like he was doing a press conference or was giving a State of the Union speech. I don't think he came equipped as a candidate, Obama. I think Romney came as the candidate. And with that, we had to ask some questions about, well, what are they talking about? And I think what Obama was basically talking about is let's make policy. And Governor Romney was talking about let's make a deal. And I don't mean that in a snide way. I think both things have to happen for the next president. They've got to make good policy, and they've got to also build coalitions. And the danger with focusing too much on one or the other is that you could have good policy but not get it passed, and you could have a great deal, but it's not going to address the systemic problems. So both of them had a different little slice and dice about what this debate was about.
Different roles, John Green?
Yeah, I just think it had a lot to do with different roles. There also seemed to be a different debate strategy. It was my impression that President Obama spoke a lot directly into the camera, as if he was talking directly to voters and trying to make his case to them. Mm-hmm. Governor Romney did some of that, but he also spent a lot of time addressing the president directly, as if he wanted to rebut some of the things that the Obama campaign has said about him. And that was interesting because both of the candidates seemed to have a little bit different strategy in who they were appealing to in the debate.
I noticed that, and as Mitt Romney was addressing President Obama, often President Obama wasn't even looking at him, and it didn't seem a point of disrespect, as opposed to just, as you said, a little bit different strategy.
I think they had sort of, if you look at it as an Olympic hurdler, they had different goals. Romney had to come into this debate, clear all the hurdles cleanly, and run his personal best. Obama had already won the heat previously to that, already knew he was in the semifinal. So they both set themselves up now to go into the next part of the debate to add on to what they see as their perceived weaknesses. And when you talk about winning, clearly Romney won what his goals were. What is next, though, is did he win enough to move people? Obama had to win enough to keep people in place because he's ahead and to add. Romney had to win enough to keep his base, add, and actually take away some from Obama.
John Green, any overnight polls?
Yeah, there was an overnight poll done by CNN that showed that most people who watched the debate believed that Romney did better. But, you know, I think we have to be a little bit cautious about those kinds of overnight polls. The way sampling works, it's hard to get a representative a group of people. But, you know, I think that will, you know, as we often hear people say, that will add to the campaign narrative the impression that, you know, to use the previous example, that Romney was able to get over the hurdles cleanly here in the first debate.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we are rehashing the debate from last night. If you'd like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Did the debate move you one way or the other or not? Give us a call and tell us why. I had an email from Charlotte earlier this morning. She made the point that after the BBC World News came on, she was listening to it on the radio, apparently. That was when she learned that Syrian artillery shells had struck Turkish territory, killing 5 civilians, including a mother and 3 of her children. And the Turks, our NATO allies, had responded with their own mortar rounds. She wrote, this morning the report was that the Turks had continued in their shelling into the night. And she wondered if Obama was waiting for a call from Putin last night, telling him that Putin had succeeded in controlling his boy Assad. We do have mutual defense obligations under NATO, and things could get really ugly. The point I think she's making is the president perhaps had other things on his mind, too. John?
You know, that's entirely possible. I mean, it's a very weighty job to be president of the United States. There are certain advantages that come from it, of course, stature, having a little bit more influence over policy, being the person that people look to in a crisis. But, you know, there's a downside, too. I mean, there's just a lot of things to worry about. You know, it's an often remarked upon point, but I think it's worth making. Presidents tend to age a lot while they're in the White House.
Yeah, if we put his photos up from 4 years ago during the debates to last night, I think there'd be a huge difference for the president.
Yeah, and I think that's because of the human toll that comes to people who hold that kind of position. So, you know, I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if the president had a lot on his mind last night besides just the political event of the debate.
And Joan McLean, not only that, but the point has been made several times, and when both sides were lowering expectations before the debate, the point was made that the president probably wouldn't do as well as Mitt Romney because he hadn't had as much practice in the past year.
That could be true. I mean, he, I think, took the similar approach at the convention. He now has had two performances which his supporters wish had been a little bit different. But we're used to thinking of him as a president, and perhaps he's used to thinking himself as a president and hasn't quite gotten into candidate mode when it comes to these kinds of appearances. And so as a president, you almost had a sense of him wanting to say, do you know how hard this job is, when he was looking so serious? So this might be what John was saying, is that he can't say that, but boy, was he feeling it.
I think this goes to a question that Peter in Columbus might have. Hi, Peter, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thank you.
You bet.
Yes, there were a couple of moments in the debate when Governor Romney said something that seemed to me to invite a pretty obvious comeback that the president didn't make. And I was wondering what your guests thought of that. One example being that, you know, his description for overcoming gridlock was going to be sitting down with Democrats as well as Republicans. And President Obama did say, well, the Democrats are going to be angry if you've just repealed Obamacare. But he didn't say, are you under the impression that I did not start out by sitting down with a Republican? You know, this was obviously drawing a contrast to imagined behavior by the president that simply had not occurred. And there were a couple of other moments like that. And I'm just wondering, from the point of view of debating or strategy, why did the president make the obvious calculation that it wasn't worth his time?
And, you know,
Peter, the obvious comeback?
You weren't the only one that brought that up. There were lots of people on Facebook that questioned why the president didn't contradict more of what Mitt Romney was saying. John Green, any thoughts about that?
You know, I think it may be part of the, you know, the presidential demeanor. And there was a real effort, I think, on behalf of both candidates to be very respectful towards each other. But of course, if you're spending your time contradicting your opponent, which might have been a good choice, I mean, who knows? Certainly a lot of people think it would have been. Then you're giving up time for an affirmative message where you're, you know, getting out your points. And I thought maybe the president was a bit more focused on getting his message out rather than, you know, the tit for tat in the debate. But I do agree with the caller that there were a couple of moments where I thought, wow, you know, here comes the obvious response. And then it didn't happen. And I was kind of surprised by that.
Thank you, Peter, for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
One thing he didn't bring up that a lot of people assumed, you know, you couldn't even imagine, was the 47% remark that Mitt Romney made a few weeks ago that made such, you know, there was so much hay made over that. Joan McLean, were you surprised that President Obama didn't bring up the 47% remark?
I wasn't surprised that he didn't bring it up in those terms.
Okay.
I was surprised that he didn't weave it into his narrative or answer back to Governor Romney when he said what he was really focused on was helping the middle class. I think the president could have said, let's talk about the middle class. They're the people that. And when they slip, here's where they slip too. And I might have thought he might say, and you know what? They're not victims.
A lot of them were good. In other words, in a more subtle way, get to that. There was a lot of talk back and forth about the middle class. But I think Joe McLean makes a good point, John Green, don't you, that they really, once again, never got down to defining what do they mean by the middle class?
Oh, I think that's correct. And they, you know, and that was some of the imprecision that comes with the debate. You know, everybody's sort of for the same thing, but they're not, you know, defining it in precise terms. And when you get the definition, there often are really stark differences between them. You know, it's interesting. There were a lot of people in the sort of run up to the debate were expecting that there'd be a lot of zingers, you know, the 47%.
Right.
Vice President Biden's comment about the middle class being buried. I think Romney did make a brief mention to that, but there was remarkably little of that, which was kind of interesting to me too, because that was a way, you know, in a respectful fashion, that the candidates could have connected themselves to the broader narrative of the campaign. And we really didn't see it happen. So that's another thing that surprised me about it.
I was looking for, of course, everyone was looking for the zingers because we've been prepped for those. and I think the trickle-down economics, I guess, was sort of a... he actually used that phrase twice, I think.
The trickle-down government?
Trickle-down government. And he used trickle-down economics, I think, too, was another one. But trickle-down government was an interesting one. And then the other, he made that comment, and he's made this before, I think, or other people have made this, that you are entitled to a house and a plane, but not your own facts, making reference to the fact that you might be president and a big shot, but you can't make things up. I'm trying to think of what else he might have said that was remotely snarky, though.
Well, being here at WOSU, we must bring up Big Bird.
Well, but we actually Marcus did on Facebook.
And the one thing that I think that Governor Romney has to be careful about with these asides is it takes people to a place that he's not taking things seriously. On the other hand, it's a lighter moment. So you're always trying to figure out what is the in-between. But I think all the snarkiness that we've had, especially here in Ohio, I think all the pointed conversations, voters are sort of weary. I doubt that those zingers or anything like that caught their attention. I think they really wanted to hear two things. What are you going to do about taxes? What are you going to do about jobs? And can I believe anything you say?
Here was a kind of a lighter moment as we roll down from this segment. When asked how each candidate would do to tackle a deficit, Mitt Romney said instead of raising taxes, he would shrink government and cut spending.
What things would I cut from spending? Well, first of all, I will eliminate all programs by this test if they don't pass it. Is the program so critical it's worth borrowing money from China to pay for it? And if not, I'll get rid of it. Obamacare is on my list. I apologize, Mr. President. I use that term with all respect, by
I
the
like
way.
It.
Good. Okay, good. So I'll get rid of that.
So they agreed on that. It was a lighter moment. The president has embraced the phrase Obamacare, or the word Obamacare, by the way, right, John Green?
Oh, yes, he has. And it's interesting because when affordable health care was passed, in 2010, and the critics started calling it Obamacare, a lot of Democrats were very upset by that, and they wanted the law to be called by its real name. Of course, it has a real name, right? It's the Affordable Health Care Act. And, but I think the president has decided that this is his signature program, and if that's what people want to call it, then he's going to embrace it. But there was, I think a little bit of shift in strategy as we got into this year.
Joe McLean?
Yeah, John, I think you're absolutely right, but it goes back to your point. I think that the president had an opportunity there to say, yeah, I've embraced it. I've embraced the care part of it, and then do a little bit of an explanation about what he means about that. I think that was a way to just keep it substantive, but also answer back.
You are listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My guests are John Green, Director of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron, and Joe McLean, a political scientist and government professor at Ohio Wesleyan University. We'll be right back.
I'm NPR's political junkie, Ken Rudin, and Ohio is a very important swing state in the 2012 presidential election. So important, in fact, that Talk of the Nation host Neil Conan and I will be visiting WOSU to host the Political Junkie Roadshow. Join us Wednesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. on the Ohio State campus for an evening of politics, trivia, punditry, and sophisticated humor. Visit WOSU.org/politicaljunkie to register for this free event.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides Begins. And what's in a color? Considering the impact of skin color on social interactions throughout history, with the author of a new book on the topic. That discussion from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. 61 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, warming up very nicely to a high of 78. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 56 degrees. Sunshine with a chance of rain on Friday, a high of 70. Support for 89.7 comes from Mauburn Academy, inviting parents of middle and high school ADHD or dyslexic students to a Mauburn Academy High School Information Session, Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m. The path to college begins at Mauburn Academy High School. More at mauburnacademy.org. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are rehashing the debate last night between President Barack Obama and presidential hopeful Republican Mitt Romney. Faced off last night in the first of three presidential debates. Joining us, John Green from the University of Akron, and also Joan McLean from Ohio Wesleyan University. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. From Licia on Facebook, she writes, I was surprised how well prepared Romney was. I was expecting the president to, quote, out debate him, end quote. I don't think the philosophical differences between the two men were clear, though I feel they are quite dissimilar. Romney appeared much more centrist than I think he is, and the president didn't have his typical smooth and passionate delivery. I was disappointed the choice did not appear as clear as I thought it would. John?
Well, you know, it is interesting. A number of commentators have made the point that the moderate Romney showed up last night, and, you know, he took some pains to say things like, I believe in appropriate regulation. I think there's an appropriate role for government. And, you know, that's more like the Mitt Romney who was governor of Massachusetts rather than the Mitt Romney we saw in the Republican primary debates last year and earlier in the spring. So, you know, I did think that that was probably a good strategy, but probably different than a lot of people expected. And given that Governor Romney has often appeared uncomfortable in debate formats and in other public speaking circumstances, I think I can understand the person's point there that a much more confident and comfortable Romney showed up last night. So, you know, there were a couple of surprises. I don't think that this was quite the Romney that a lot of people expected to see.
Yeah, I think the caller is absolutely right about the assessment. We saw two moderates last night. But if you listen to their discussion about how they're going to go ahead and try to solve a policy, they still were quite different. Still trying to figure out how Romney can do what he wants to do, the governor can do what he wants to do, without a combination of raising taxes and cutting programs. And for the president, still trying to figure out what he's going to do new if reelected for 4 years.
Let's talk about the format of the debate for just a second. Evelyn on Facebook made the point that Jim Lehrer lost the debate. Of course, Jim Lehrer being the moderator of the debate, he's been doing this for a long time. And I think I saw an article, or read an article in the Washington Post this morning. It could have been any number of newspapers at this point that said something to the fact that this is not an easy job at all. Marcus on Facebook said it was quite bold and arrogant of Romney to unabashedly tell Jim Lehrer and PBS that he would cut funding. That notwithstanding the topic itself, other people complained on Facebook about the fact that he talked over the moderator. How does that come across in a debate like this, John Green?
Well, you know, it was interesting because it was a very different format. And, you know, you're typically in debates, we tend to have short questions with rebuttals, oftentimes a panel. In this case, we had a single moderator.
Yep.
And I think Jim Lehrer did lose control of that at several occasions because he gave the candidates a longer period to speak. And the candidates, both of them, particularly Romney, though, took advantage of that and it really pushed the limit of that. And, you know, I don't think that Romney came across as disrespectful. That's my opinion. But he did come across as fairly aggressive. He was going to make his point, even if his time had expired. And, you know, there was, just to be fair here, there was a moment when President Obama had a similar situation where he said, well, look, I have 5 more seconds until you interrupted me.
Right.
And then let him go on.
But so, that was more making fun of his opponent at that point, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so, too. But I think that, you know, on paper, it probably looked like a great format where you could have longer discussions between the candidates. It did invite them to keep speaking. And I think Blair was unable to control that and make it fit into the format that they'd all agreed to.
But it was refreshing for me, Joan McLean, I don't know about you, that he did get in a few follow-up questions, which I hunger for so much in
yes.
so many of the debates nowadays.
Yeah, to get a specific answer to a question or to a follow-up. We needed more of that, and that's why the time limits did interfere a little bit.
Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, the debate showed to me, being that Obama and probably both candidates you know, they spend about $3 million a month on polling. It kind of showed to me that the polls are not skewed, and Obama does know he has a lead in the states that he needs, which would be Ohio, Iowa, Nevada, and New Hampshire. And I think he overdid it, but I think that's why he played it safe, and I think that's why Romney was aggressive.
Joe McLean?
I think you're right. And what John said earlier is so important. What the snapshot poll tells us today may not tell us the same thing a week from now, because it's not who overall, it's who scored points or solidified their votes among key constituencies. So one would have to ask yourself, did Obama do anything to lose women's votes where he has a lead? And did Governor Romney do anything to gain them? Did Governor Romney do anything to lose white male votes where he has a lead? Or did President Obama do anything to move them into the undecided? So until we hear or see some of those reactions, and we actually don't even know yet who watched, so the water cooler talk today will be interesting, because often it's the second and third day where we begin to see a solidification of reaction.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. There was a couple references when they were talking about the economy. Of course, they spent much of the debate talking about the economy slash deficit slash anything to do with taxing. I think as Romney said, he said, now I'm concerned that the path we're on has just been unsuccessful. The president has a view very similar to the view he had when he ran 4 years ago, that a bigger government, spending more, taxing more, regulating more, if you will, trickle-down government would work. And to that, President Obama responded, the approach that Governor Romney's talking about is the same sales pitch that was made in 2001 and 2003, and we ended up with the slowest job growth in 50 years, which is a point that we talked about earlier with factcheck.org. He said, we ended up moving from surplus to deficits, and it's all culminated in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. So it was real clear Mitt Romney running or debating against 4 years of Barack Obama, and Barack Obama going back and pointing out what he came into the deal with. He did that a few times, but he didn't overdo it, I didn't think. John Green, did you?
No, I thought the president handled it very well. I mean, there are two competing views here, but they're both about the past. And Governor Romney wants to focus on the past 4 years because he thinks that puts the blame on the president's shoulders. The president, of course, wants to expand the time period and argue that, you know, he inherited a huge mess when he came into office, and there's still more work to do. So, you know, it's really interesting that because a lot of the arguments really about the last 4 to 8 years. And although the candidates did talk a bit about the future, I think both of them, perhaps a little more on the Governor Romney side, were a little bit vague about exactly what's going to happen, you know, in the next 4 years. And partly that's because people know what happens, whatever their point of view is, in recent times, and the future, of course, is hard to predict.
We have a couple Facebook comments critical of the president from Tom on Facebook. He says, if the debate went on any longer, Obama would be voting for Mitt. And from Ladd on Facebook, he said there was only one man on stage who understood economics, business, and taxes. Only one guy seriously talked about working across the aisle and how to do it, and it wasn't the president. He was exposed as an empty suit fraud who's been protected from tough questions and cross-examination for 4 years. Joan McLean, does that...
Well, certainly that sentiment has been part of what's prevented the president from reaching across the aisle. We have to parse out what both can do. Neither one of them is going to inherit an economy or world situation that's going to allow them to only work within their party. It's just not possible. So the voters are going to have to make the decision of who they think can best do it based on what they've done, but also based on what they know about how it is going into the next 4 years. We're in difficult times. It's going to make difficult decisions imminent. And I think voters are trying. That's probably why this one group of undecided, they might be fiscally conservative, but liberally social. And they just don't see one candidate yet as their candidate. So, but I think to label empty suit on either side or to label one group as being able to do it better than the other group is clearly not where the voting public is right now.
John Green, you specialize in politics and religion. There were a few subtle references to religion, one to our Creator, one to the fact that we all speak to the same God, or we all are led by the same God, or something like that, by Mitt Romney in both cases. Any sense about what the point was of bringing up religion in those ways? He also did it in terms of course, our Bill of Rights and that sort of thing, too.
Yeah, he did have a number of references to religion. And the way I interpreted that was a shout-out to the religious conservatives that are part of his base, some Roman Catholics, some of them Protestants, who have many grievances with President Obama. But many of them did not support Governor Romney in the primary. So they preferred Rick Santorum or some of the other candidates. So part of what is going on here, as Joan indicated, is each of these candidates are trying to be careful to solidify their base. And so it was interesting to me that Romney made those remarks, but he didn't elaborate on them very much. And there was another example where he talked about how he supported education, but he thought that parents should have choice.
Yeah.
To some people, that's, reference to vouchers or support for parochial and religious schools. So I saw that as kind of a base directed at mobilizing this element of space that haven't been very happy with him, for a variety of reasons, including the fact that, of course, to many religious conservatives, the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, are, not quite within the orbit of Christianity. So I thought it was a very interesting reference. I noticed, however, that the president left that alone.
He did leave that alone. He also, the issue of when it came to the vouchers, which is what he was talking about for students for public education, he talked about giving more power to the states and giving more responsibility to the states where it belongs, so states could choose for themselves. But in that case, he talked about federal money going directly to the students, which I thought was an interesting distinction to make.
Yeah, I thought so, too. And a lot of the people that among religious conservatives would like to see that happen, right? They'd like the money to not go to institutions where there are often legal obstacles, but go to individuals. And, whether people would agree with that or not, that is an interesting argument among that community.
I read some comments today that maybe this was a debate better suited for sort of political junkies, people who have been following the issues. They made lots of references to the different policies that are out there and without explaining them necessarily. Joan McLean, did you agree that this was more of an insider kind of debate, or do you think anybody could have hasn't been following it could have gleaned something from it?
This certainly was a debate for those of us who watch C-SPAN and think it's the real reality show on television, and that we follow Simpson Bowles and we know about Dodd-Frank. This may be where the moderator could have stepped in. Or with all the ability now to put so many different things on the screen while you're watching it, it would have been nice if the networks maybe could have put a little bit of a blurb. So that's why I'll be interested to see how the audience share stayed with the debate over time.
What did you think, John Green, about that?
I thought there was an unusual amount of policy detail in this debate, much more than we usually see in debates. And I had a similar reaction to Jones. I wondered if a lot of ordinary voters who might be tuning in to see these candidates side by side might be a little bit confused. If you just think about the debate over taxes, Obama plan, the Romney plan, there was an awful lot of detail there. And I have to say that, as someone who follows this carefully, I was a little confused at a couple of points. So, a lot of very specific information that some people will find a little difficult to process because they don't have the kind of information about those details.
Of course, thank goodness for PolitiFact and factcheck.org and all the rest of them out there doing in their due diligence on checking the facts for us so quickly. This is certainly a benefit we didn't have, even 8 years ago, really.
I think it's changed the political debate because mm-hmm. now we have a means to verify what the candidates are claiming, at least, in terms of the basic empirical question.
Josh on Facebook had a little bit of fun here. He said, I think the debates should be replaced with feats of strength, an individual dramatic monologue competition, an 11th grade standardized test from the No Child Left Behind era. If you fail it, you don't get to go on the next field trip, and you can't be on the ballot in California and Texas.
And let's bring your birth certificate with you.
Oh, bring your birth certificate with you, too. Just a parting thoughts about Joan McLean. What do you think each side gets from this in terms of going forward to the next debate?
Well, they get to go forward.
Yes, they do get to go forward. They get to
game's
go on that
not,
next.
Yeah. Game's not over. Right? Race is not over. You know, all last week there were all these kinds of thoughts about the surge in a way that Obama was solidifying support. I don't think he'll lose support in meaningful ways. Some things might fall back into the margin of error, but they get to go forward. We get to enjoy some more events in the key swing states. We get to think about things, and the world is always there to do one thing or the other.
How do you think he comes back differently, John Green?
You know, I think that the biggest success for Governor Romney last night was that a larger number of people will tune in for the next debate, partly to see if they saw the real Romney last night, but also to see how the president will adjust. And that's one of the things about these multiple debates, is every candidate has a chance to adjust and fine-tune their message. So I agree with Joe, you know, the show goes on.
And the next debate is a different forum.
And is that the foreign policy debate is the next one, or is that between the...
That one is the next one's a town hall that covers multiple issues.
Okay, another domestic, yeah, okay. The foreign policy might be an interesting debate, particularly given the world, something we didn't think would be the case necessarily a year ago, but when that happens, maybe we'll all be back to talk about it then. John Green?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we may have an entirely different foreign policy agenda a few weeks from now. Who knows? I mean, things happen in the world. But I think the next debate is between Vice President Biden and the Republican nominee, Paul Ryan. And I think for those of us who are really interested in politics, that's going to be a really fun debate. You know, a number of other people may tune in just to have a chance to see Paul Ryan, who they know relatively little about. So, you know, another big event next week.
All right. Well, John Green, thanks for talking about this one this week.
No, you're welcome.
John Green, director of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron, and also Joan McLean, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
Joan McLean, she's a politics and government professor at Ohio Wesleyan University. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.